And welcome to another Gaslit podcast. And thank you very much indeed for listening and for watching. We've got our YouTube channel with under the section of podcasts. So we've released all the extra videos as well on there. So I'm recording this audio and with a bit of video. And it's just me sort of rattling off in the office here. So if it's just an audio option you're watching, there'll be no sort of massive benefit apart from watching me being a bit of a fool in myself. But there we are. So this week's episode is a few questions that we get around this time of year, and one of them is, when is a good time to change the boiler? What I'd say is a good time to change the boiler is not when you need to change the boiler. So it's a planned thing, like you're having an extension done or a loft conversion, and part and parcel of all of that works, you get your heating system upgraded and your boiler changed. That is probably the most perfect time to do it. Midsummer, you're not missing any heating, you're not too fussed on a bit of hot water, and off you go, and it's all lovely jubblies. Probably I'd say 90-ish% of what we do is reactive. So it's a disaster purchase. So it's gone wrong, it's in a rental and you're the landlord, or it's your own home. Oh my God, that's it, the walls have fallen off. Electric heater's come out, we've got to get it sorted. So it becomes an absolute disaster purchase. So when we're in that sort of running around sort of state, a lot of people don't sort of add up and put a little bit of budget away for that. You know, don't have a pot of money sitting in a savings account saying when the boiler goes wrong, that's what's going to pay for it. So it tends to be on a budget, shopping round, what can we do for the, you know, what's the most we can get for the least amount of money paying. So what I would say is that if you can plan to change your boiler, now most boilers, modernish boilers, will last around sort of 10, 12-ish years old. My one at home's been cracking on for 15 years, 16 years. So that's going on and on. And I know I'm on borrowed time, even for my own one at home. And I've got some plans for that, maybe going a hybrid. I don't think I'm going to go full heat pump. I'm in a mid-terrace 1930s, and we don't have the space for a cylinder and all those bits and pieces. But as a hybrid, potentially. And if I do, then I'll run through and do some videos all for it as well. So, watch this space on that one. So the biggest efficiencies that you can make is that when you're choosing a boiler, is there is a bit of a discrepancy between, they're not all the same boiler. They don't give you all the same efficiencies. So we start looking at the VTEC Ecotec Pluses and the Viessmann boilers will give you around, out of the box, about 94% efficiencies. So fantastic, high efficiency, good quality boilers, but they are the premium end. And if you go to the other end of the spectrum, you're looking at your Frohleys and your Volcaras. We don't fit those boilers because they're down the bottom there, and they're just, personally, I just think they're too much hassle. But we're looking around the 88% efficiencies. So like a 6% difference in a brand new boiler, just straight out of the box. Now, when they start planning heating systems, certainly for like your boiler plus, you start, oh, you get an extra 1% efficiency if you add this control, and if you add this, and if you add that, and you can sort of bring your efficiency ratings up. But that's all down to the way you control the heat and try and lower the flow temperatures on your boiler. So the biggest gain you're going to get, or the biggest gains we've ever had with boilers, is going condensing. So if you've got a boiler and underneath is that little white pipe that sticks down and may go into a bigger pipe, may go into a drain or something, that's the condensing boiler. And those condensing boilers are the biggest leap in efficiencies that we've come across. So one thing I would say is that If you're starting to get any funny noises, funny smells, really terrible smells, black soot in, that's a massive danger sign if you get black soot in. Or if you're getting sort of water leaking out your boiler. Now, over the years, we've come across so many boilers that have got unnecessary damage because they were leaking, they put a bowl under it, they sort of put it off, they procrastinated. And then when we open it up and we go, oh, that's faulty, that's damaged. That didn't need to be damaged. We could have nipped that in the bud and got it done there and then. But now the repair bills are even more higher than they could have been, which is really sad to see, because a lot of people, they're sort of, you know, watching the pennies and stuff, And you're like, there's nothing we can do. You know, this is going to take time. It's going to take materials. And so this is going to cost money. So, yeah, just on that basis there, if you do see anything, try and get it, nip it in the bud. And if you do, if you're in the UK, make sure you use someone that's gas safe registered as well. Or wherever country you are, you'll have your own set of rules, but I'm not sure. I haven't looked them up. I haven't bothered. So smart meters. We get asked quite a lot about smart meters, gas and electric. Now, I don't install meters. That's another gas qualification, meters. Like anything in gas safe, oh, if there's something different, it's going to be another cause. There's going to be another 5-year review on it, and there's going to be a bit more money to pay. But on smart meters, one thing they don't really tell you is they talk about the money. You will not save a penny on a smart meter if you don't make any changes to the way you use it. So the idea of the smart meter is showing you how much it costs to run your heating yesterday. It will show you how much it costs you to boil the kettle. And it's trying to make you curb your habits into using less, and that will then save you money. But the actual meter itself, don't do a sausage. So if you don't change your habits, you won't. And personally for me, if I'm going to have a 4-minute shower, I'm going to have a 4-minute shower, and that's that. If I'm going to have 2 cups of tea, I'm going to have 2 cups of tea. It's not going to change the way I live. So I'm not personally going to benefit from actually having a smart meter, electric or gas, as it comes through. So we get a lot of requests about taking on apprenticeships. Now, as a business, I think we're too small to take on apprenticeships. We had one guy who was a lovely lad, and we took him on for work experience. We knew his mum and dad, lovely people. But we don't tend to take them on because the range of work we do, it may not be that beneficial to the person that are bringing them on. But there's a couple of things that I could give you as a tips. So if you're coming through and you want to be an apprentice, now that doesn't matter if you're sparking, plumbing, carpentry, bricklaying, it really doesn't matter, plastering, doesn't matter, because I've got some tips for you guys. I've got five top tips, and this is really goes across the board no matter what you do. So number one is communication. So like me doing this podcast here, I'm just talking to a screen, and I've got my microphone down here. But it's having that confidence to communicate. And that's to communicate, you know, good morning, how you doing, how was last night, that sort of communication, as well as I've got a problem, I don't know what to do, I've made a mistake, I'm a little bit embarrassed. So that openness of communication, speaking clearly. I don't know, I've got teenagers in my house, and one's not a teenager anymore, but you know, they want to use different words to what's in the English language or what we grew up with. I like to call it a bit of Londonese, as they as the old slang comes out, and I think they pick it up on the YouTube videos and all the social media sort of video shorts and stuff like that. But talk clearly and talk in a language that people understand. That's probably the easiest way to put it. So try not to use any shortcuts or slang words or abbreviations in what you're trying to get across. An absolute massive thing is when to use your mobile phone. The amount of youngsters, I've got a couple of phones here, that when they got nothing to do, first thing to do, out comes the phone in the hand. Bish, 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 bish. Now, if you've got a mentor, you've got a boss, you've got someone that's in charge of you, monitoring you, mentoring, whatever it'll be, and they see you doing that. Now, remember, we all come from different generations. So my generation, whatever age I am this week, I didn't grow up with mobile phones. I didn't get my first phone until I was 18. And then I didn't have no one to ring because hardly anyone had a mobile phone. It was all on landlines. So I was a bit of ahead of the game back in the day. But everyone's got a mobile phone now. And it's almost seen as the, I don't know what to do, get my phone out and have a little look and a scroll and a play and a watch or whatever you're doing onto your phone. But it does annoy the older folk. So your generation above and the generation above that, they see it sometimes as disrespectful. So when you use your phone, you're on a break, you're having a cup of tea, you know, even if you're in the van or vehicle traveling to and from, you might find that more appropriate than physically during the day, even if you've got nothing to do. But what I would say is there's always something to do. No matter what trade you're in, pick up the broom, pick up the dustpan and brush, go and do the washing up. get around the T's going for the other work people that are busy, that really sort of introduce you. You're not a tea person, you're not a cleaner, you're not a sweeper-upper, but what you want to do is show that you're not frightened of doing that and you're not shy of doing those sort of stuff. Number three on my list, excuse me, is pranks. Now, certainly my generation, it was all about the pranks, and you see it on the social media and on the videos. They're not really a place for them because a prank is really, you know, if you boil it down to what it is, it's someone's going to get covered in something, someone's going to get wet, you know, cold, miserable, made a fool of, long waits, tartan paint, and all that sort of stuff. So realistically, you know, pranks really in the 2025 as we are, aren't really suitable for the workplace, really. We can have a laugh, we can have a joke, and we can tell some, you know, some funny anecdotes and stuff like that, which is absolutely great. But physical pranks, make, you know, putting a carpet over a hole, making someone fall through it, no, people just get injured. So really, in the workplace, if you're in apprenticeship and all of that clamber is going on, really you need to think, is that placement for you? All right. So number four, be flexible in your learning. So what I'm trying to get at is, you know, if you're there, I'm going to be a plumber. And then someone says, oh, I got this a boiler to wire in. So have you ever done any wiring before? Now, we're not talking about you rewiring a house. You might be putting a plug on and stuff like that. So just be flexible in your approach, because it's all to do with the way you come across and the way that you approach situations. So always be flexible and willing to take on, because there's lots of people out there, myself included. I have a bit of a wide history of what I can do and what I've done in the past. So when someone comes up to me with something, there's a good chance that I've either done it, know how to do it, or can work it out just by having a quick think about it. So yeah, just be flexible in your learning, because it'll all come together once in the end. So there we are. So number five, the most common skills across all the trades is problem solving. So when you're in a classroom and you've got a piece of pipe and it's going to a bunch of clips and you pull a bend and you solder an elbow and it's all out in the open, it's all nice, it's absolutely fantastic. But what do you do when you've got to cut a floor open and it's 2 foot deep and you're laying on your belly and there's people want to walk over the top of you, and it's dark and your head torch has gone flat, and all your hands are wet, and then you drop your spanner? So really you need to, you know, this problem solving. Okay, do I need to put a little bit of wire or a bit of string or a bit of rope around the handle of my spanner, so if it does drop down, I ain't got to spend 20 minutes now trying to improvise some bit of bamboo to try and pick it up off the floor because it's the only one I've got. So just think about the problems that might arise of what you're doing and how you can overcome them and minimize them. And we're not, you know, God forbid you're at the top of a scaffold and you drop a spanner, you know, that could kill someone. You know, we're just talking about silly little bits and pieces that all these little 5 minutes, these 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, all add up. You know, how many 5 minutes are there in an hour? There's not 20, I can tell you that for free. You know, there's only a handful of 5 minutes in an hour. So when you're messing around trying to do these things, things really do get dragged on. And if you're working with someone, you can really sort of grind their gears, because if they've got to get back and you're holding them up just because you've made a silly mistake. So it's all about problem solving and thinking ahead and where you are and what you got. So the last thing I want to go on about is last week, I won't say where I was and I won't describe the person, but I was out and about. I'll just say that I was just out and about and I met a person. So I was in a public arena, in a public environment, we'll just say, and there was a person there that had a big bandage up on their arm and they had like a big mark on their face and stuff. And I got talking to him and I said, oh, like, you know, you look a bit sore, mate. What's happened? It looked like a motorbike crash, to be honest. And he said, I got burns. So he had a medical episode on his own and he fell when he was unconscious. And he fell against a hot radiator and hot pipework. And the mark on his face was actually a burn from the hot pipe. Now, I don't know what boiler he had or what temperature it was running at, but clearly, it looked like a burnt barbecue sausage cut in half and stuck on his face. He had some teeth missing and a big chunk out of his lip. And then the back of his hand was then wedged against the radiator somehow, and he lost all the skin on the back of his hand. And then that was last Friday, and he actually had the skin graft that day as well at East Grinstead Hospital. So it goes into a podcast that I did a few weeks ago about LST radiators and the surface temperature being protected above 43 degrees. So if anybody that's in a vulnerable medical due to age or anything medical about them, say they had epilepsy, say, and they had a turn and they fell and then they couldn't get themselves off and away from that danger, that can then arise. So he's a very, very, very lucky person. And sadly, I even forgot his name, be honest. But yeah, we had a really, really good conversation about his injury and how he got it. And I was absolutely, I've never seen anyone like it. It was from just a hot radiator and a hot pipe. You know, you put your hand on it and go, oh, that's a bit hot, and take it off. But not realizing, actually, if you leave that skin in contact, what damage that can do. Absolutely phenomenal. And he's going to be months and months and months in rehabilitation. That's, you know, and then all the infection risks that go along with all this major trauma as well. He's lucky he didn't go into shock, because he wouldn't be standing there talking to me on that last Friday. So yeah, I just want to leave that with you. So hot surfaces, radiators, vulnerable people coming into contact, it's super, super important that that the people are protected. Certainly around children's nurseries, doctor surgeries, where you may get people, obviously all different parts of their life, and care homes, that sort of sectors there. Okay, guys, well, thank you very much indeed. I hope this hasn't been too boring. I've got a new bit of kit set up. So let us know in the comments what you think about this. I've got this little teleprompter thing. So I've got my notes on the screen so I don't have to keep looking down at the old post-its and stuff. So let us know. Send us an email at podcast@gaslect.net. If you've got any questions you want answered, let me know and I'll look them up and I'll explain them in my own little way. We'll be doing another giveaway soon. So I just need to find something nice and practical with that. And the lady is in the Philippines, that she won the speaker. She should have that in the next couple of weeks on the old ship freight or whatever it's called. But yeah, she entered the competition and won that all the way over there. And I know she listens a lot, actually. So thank you very much indeed. It really does mean a lot, actually, to us when you get people that listen all around the world. Okay, guys, you take care. Lovely to see you. Stay safe. Take care. Bye.